for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Well, so when Rob had first approached me to speak on a Sunday, I immediately said yes. And I didn't really realize what that meant because Rob was like, oh, great, I'm going to let you speak the week before Easter. You're going to have to close down, the series we're currently working on. Also, I need you to preach on my favorite bands. And I've never really heard you speak before, but don't worry, I'll be sitting 6 feet in front of you and just judging you the whole time. So good luck, kid. You know, have fun with this. No, but I'm really excited to be here today. And I'm really excited I get to speak about this song that we just heard, because the band Need to Breathe and our church have something really in common with what this song's about and our mission. And if you just listened to what was said in the last 10 minutes, we have said the line, love God, love people, make a difference, probably like 1,400 times. And you understand that that is an important mission that we want to follow in our lives and in this church. And that's something we really want to push forward. And I love this song because the song that Need to Breathe is talking about really captures that message of this church. If you look at the lyrics at the very beginning of the song, it's really kind of upsetting where they take you. If you really listen to the words, why it sounds like a really good song, it's actually really ironic in the way it's talking about itself, because the band Need to Breathe, when they wrote it, were in a really stressful time as a band. They had been touring for about two and a half years just straight. The same band had been together for 13 years, and they still hadn't like broke into the big market of what they were trying to do as a band. They still hadn't like reached the platform they were hoping for. Now, they were touring with Taylor Swift, so they were singing songs to 20, 30, 50,000 people at a time, but they just couldn't break out of this little mold. However, they were really recognized in the Christian community, and they had received tons of awards, and they had gotten number one hits on the Christian charts, but they wanted more, and they kept on going for more, and they wanted this idea that they could keep going and make and do more for the band. But on the inside, they were struggling with what they were doing, because they realized that they were searching for something that maybe God didn't have for them. They were going after this idea of what musicians are supposed to do, which is become huge and famous and just have everyone buy their albums, and it started to really weigh on them what they were going for. They started fighting a lot, and in fact, 2 days before they started their European tour dates, their drummer, who had been with them from the beginning, just up and quit the band and said he couldn't do it anymore because it was too stressful. So they got to this place where they all got together and they realized this isn't what God has for us. This isn't what we should be doing. And they just felt lost, like they didn't know where they were going, what they should be doing, because they had thought that this idea of being rich and famous and getting their music out there was the main thing they should be doing, and realized that wasn't what God wanted. So they wrote the song, and if you just read through the first couple lyrics with me, you can see it just says, "Isn't it amazing how a man can find himself alone, calling into the darkness for an answer he has never known? Isn't it amazing how God can take a broken man, let him find a fortune, let him ruin it with his own two hands? And he climbs up on the hill, and on the rock on which he stands, he looks back at the crowd, he looks down at his hands, and he says, I am a difference maker. I am a difference maker, I am the only one who speaks to him, I am the friendliest friends of God." And in the lyrics, you can kind of hear this idea where they thought they were doing everything right, they thought they were being difference makers, they thought that, like, look at the everywhere we've come from, we've pushed, Christians to the front of society. We're a huge band. And they realized that they were just lost. They were in this dark place in their lives where they weren't actually following what God had for them as much as they were following what they thought was right. And they were following what they wanted to do. And I wish I could say that that is, like, a really uncommon problem in our lives. I wish I could say none of us have ever suffered with that. Let's go home and watch Ricky Fowler win the Masters. I wish, like, that would be the best sermon I could give today, if I could just say, everything's totally fine, you all know what you're doing, let's go. But this is a problem in our lives, this is a problem in all of Christianity and all of the world, because we typically do things for our own benefit. We go after things that are selfish, we try to make the most money or get the most fame, and sometimes we don't really think about what God has for us, we just do what we think is best. And I want to talk about a story in the Bible that really deals with this issue. So we're going to look at some Bible verses right now, But before we do, we want everyone to stand up to say these verses together. We think it is important to honor the text of the Lord that we'll receive more out of it. So if we stand up, we're going to say these verses together. And when those who were around him saw what would follow, they said, "Lord, shall we strike with the sword?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said, "No more of this." And he touched his ear and healed him. Let's just go into prayer real quick. God, we just ask that you bless these words. You let us hear what you have us to say. Not what I have to say, but Lord, what you want me to say. We ask that you bless everyone here as we go into this message. Amen. So cool. So to get a little background to the story, what's going on right now is this is the moment right before Jesus is taken into captivity and hung on the cross. This is the encounter that leads to that happening. And there's a couple different groups in this scenario. We have the people coming to get Jesus, and those people are built up of two separate groups. One of the groups are the Jewish temple leaders of the day. Now, the Jewish people believed in God. They believed that a Messiah was coming. They just didn't believe it was Jesus. So while Jesus was going around doing his ministry and healing people and saying he was the Son of God and was preaching this message, he was hurting what they thought was right. So they didn't like him. They wanted to get rid of his message from the world. On top of that, you have the Roman government. Now, the Roman government is like the major superpower of the day. They kind of ran most of the known world. They definitely ran Israel. And in their culture, the only God was their king, Caesar. So when Jesus is saying that he's the Son of God, he's putting himself on an equal level of Caesar, really threatening the Roman government. They're thinking, you know, he might try to incite a rebellion. He's trying to lead people. So they don't like him either, so they want to take him out. So these two groups, even though they disagree, they don't like each other, they're willing to work together to get rid of Jesus because they understand this is what he's preaching is going to hurt us. So let's just get rid of him. Let's team up and take him out. So they're coming to take him by any means necessary. That's why they're coming with like an army to like take Jesus and get rid of him no matter what happens. And then on this other side, we have Jesus' disciples. This is a group of men. They were also Jewish. But the difference between them and the temple leaders is they actually believed Jesus was the Messiah. So all of the things that the temple leaders thought were to come, they're like, no, those are happening now. But there's a big problem with their understanding of who the Messiah was and what he was going to do, because it had kind of been twisted in their culture. Because of the time of where they didn't have iPads and internet and stuff, the only thing they really had to study was the Bible, was the text that of the Old Testament that we call it. And when they're studying that, they made decisions about what these prophecies meant. So when they thought when a Messiah was coming, they're like, oh, he's going to come and destroy the Roman government and rise up a kingdom on Israel, and he's going to reign from that kingdom, and then we're going to reign the whole world, and everyone's going to be safe, and everything's going to be wonderful, and God will be praised. And so when they see these people coming to take Jesus, they're like, what a perfect scenario. All of our enemies are approaching us at one time, and God's on our side. We know this is God. So here's our perfect scenario to take everyone out. So when they see these men with swords and they're like, we want to take Jesus, it's laughable to them. Because every story they have from the Old Testament about who God is and what God was going to do is always in this idea where he comes with an army and just destroys his enemy. If you just look at some of the basic versions, just some basic versions of the Old Testament, you have stories of like Jonathan. He was the son of a king, and at one time he attacked an army by himself and killed like 20 men. He struck fear through this entire army, and because of that, God was able to tip the balance in their favor, and their army won and destroyed this other army. And then you have people like David, and I'm sure you've heard the story of David and Goliath, a very popular story, another one where just you have a king, a future king, just a man of God who sees someone standing in the way of God's mission, kills him, takes over. And finally, Samson. Samson was another major player in the Old Testament, a very strong man. It said he killed an army with the jawbone of a donkey. Just because these people were against him, he knew what was going. He knew that he was on the side of the God. These people were evil, so he didn't even need a sword. He was like, "Yeah, I'm just going to take him out." And so all these stories, it's like bad guys, death, Jesus, yay. So they had no idea. So like, it was a pretty simple idea for them. Like, of course we're going to attack with swords, and all these people are going to die. It doesn't matter their numbers. It doesn't matter the situation. And we have a situation like that comes where it's like, this is the moment. This is like the pinnacle moment where everything in the world is going to happen. So you have, it's like, it's like the gunslingers of the West. You got these guys on this side and these guys over here, and they're all just all waiting for everyone to make a move and pull up the sword. And then it says actually that Jesus' disciples actually attacked, thinking that this was the right thing to do. This was the moment that they were going to start their kingdom on earth. They're going to take everyone down. So they attacked. And in the middle of this battle, Jesus just goes and says, stop. In a time where it's like everything should be happening in this way of we win in a war, his people are super confused. All of his disciples are like, Jesus, what are you doing? Because I don't know about you guys. I watched a lot of 80s movies when I was growing up. Like, I went like the superhero movies. And just movies about heroes that just take everything on. And my idea of a hero is not someone who doesn't want to get into a fight. My idea of a hero are the Wolverines from Red Dawn who are going to take on the evil Russians who come and attack America. My idea of a hero is Kevin Bacon dancing through that town even though it's illegal. That is my idea of a hero. That's weird. Anyway, so we have this situation where it's like, Jesus, like, what are you doing? Like, you're the hero of the story. You're supposed to win. You're supposed to destroy everyone. But Jesus just says no and stops it. And he kind of flips the situation here. And instead of saying, I'm going to defeat these people, he's just like, no, I'm going to go with them. Because Jesus' mindset was not the historical mindset of these Jewish people. It wasn't built in this context. It was all focused on the will that God had for him. And the best way I can describe this to you is by talking about the NFL. Now, some of you might not care about the NFL, and you might really wonder why these stories connect, but by the end of the story, you're going to be watching the NFL to learn more about Jesus, I promise. So, there's a quarterback in the NFL. He is, without a doubt, the greatest quarterback that has ever lived, that ever was, and that ever will be. His name is Tom Brady. There you go. See? Tom, look at that, just that heroic pose he stands in. It's like every minute he knows he's just standing heroically, just waiting to be snapped and captured for this perfect moment. But Tom Brady has every single award that is known to man. He's won the most Super Bowls. He has the most records. He's broken all these records that have stood in the NFL forever. So when you see Tom Brady, you see all these great stats of how amazing he is compared to every other quarterback in the league. The position that's the most difficult, and he dominates at it by far every year. He's always in contention to win. He's always going forward and just blowing people's minds with what he does. Yet, there's this weird stat at the bottom where it says his contract value is only $41 million. And last year, he was the 13th highest paid quarterback in the league. And if you think about it, it kind of baffles your mind. Like, why is the greatest player of all time making money that's like in the middle of where players are getting paid? Why would he, the greatest player who the Cleveland Browns would trade their entire team just to hang out with him, why is that man making so little money? And then we have another quarterback I want to discuss. His name is Andrew Luck. Ugh. Just look at him. Gross. But that's beside the point. Andrew Luck has only won like 3 Pro Bowls. He's never been to a Super Bowl. Yet if you look at his contract value, he is worth 3 times the amount that Tom Brady is. So you look at these two quarterbacks, one great, one meh, and you're wondering, like, why is this meh one getting paid more than the great one? And that's because Tom Brady understands something about the NFL that Andrew Luck doesn't. There's a rule in the NFL that you can only pay your players a certain amount of money. Every team has the exact same amount of money that they can play for salaries. It's called a salary cap. So Tom Brady understands that even though he's a great quarterback, he's not the only one in the field. When he goes out and plays, he needs someone who he can throw to. He needs someone who can run. He needs people that can block for him. He needs a defense that can stop the other team's offense. It's not all about Tom Brady. Andrew Luck has not seemed to find that out quite yet, and that's why if you watch Andrew Luck play in the NFL season, he's always lying on his back because he has no one blocking him and the other teams just destroy him. There's a stat. Last year, Andrew Luck was sacked for a loss 41 times. Tom Brady was sacked 18. And that's not because Tom Brady's better skill-wise of moving around. Tom Brady stands in one position, but Tom Brady understands that I need these guys to defend me, so we need to pay them money so we can keep them around and we can be a better team. Tom Brady plays for the team. He doesn't play for himself, where Andrew Luck's playing to glorify Andrew Luck. And what I'm trying to get to there is that Jesus played for the team. Jesus didn't play to glorify himself in the moment. He didn't plan for that exact situation to happen where he would be king of the world at that moment. He didn't care about rising himself up. He didn't care about money or gold or power. Jesus cared what the team wanted. And what the team needed at that moment was for him to show obedience to his Father by sacrificing himself. And what I'm trying to get to is, Tom Brady's like Jesus. And I think, if you need to learn more about Jesus, just go watch some football and see how Tom Brady plays. No, but Jesus understood the world which he lived in, and he understood what people wanted of him. And even though it is very tempting for him to take that kingship, and it would have been very tempting for him to destroy all of his enemies and to rise up and be king, he didn't do that for one reason. He looked at what his Father wanted and followed that. And if you look at a verse right before this conflict happens where these men are coming to take Jesus, you have Jesus talking to his Father in prayer, and he says, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me. Yet not my will, but your will be done." And what Jesus is saying right here is he has no intention of dying. He doesn't want to do it. He knows what's going to happen, and this is it doesn't look like fun. I've gotten the reports. I don't want to do this. But Jesus loves his Father so much and is so in tune to the will of God that he says, "You know what? It's not about me. It's about what you want. And so if you want me to do this, I'm going to do this." Because when Jesus looks back at the lives of Christians in the past, those same stories that the disciples used to attack with, the same stories that the same men, Jesus sees their lives differently. When he sees Jonathan, he doesn't see a man who attacked an army and killed 20 people by himself. He sees someone who saw his friend David and knew he was blessed by God, so gave up his right to be king so he could bless his friends. When he thinks about David, he doesn't think about David killing Goliath. He thinks about David sacrificing the king of the day, Saul, even though Saul was chasing him around the countryside trying to kill him, because David knew that God had still blessed Saul and it wasn't his time to die. When he thinks of Samson, he doesn't think of Samson, the great man who killed an army with the jawbone of a donkey. He thinks of Samson as the man who sacrificed his own life to destroy the government of a country near his people so his people could be free. Because Jesus flips the script on what's important in our lives, and he focuses not on what he wants or what these people focus on, not what they wanted. They focus on what God wanted. It's all about God's will. And I love the part of the song that Need to Breathe sings. They have this one line in there. It says, "We are all transgressors, we're all sinners, we're all astronauts." And the writers of the song, when Need to Breathe talk about the song in interviews, they say how this song really this line really changed their idea of who God is. And it wasn't so much about what they wanted in life, and they realized that what they had to do was be like astronauts who were in space and just kind of let themselves go to God's plan for them. And they weren't in control, and even though they had all these skills and had all these wonderful things, it didn't matter, because up in space they're just floating, and they just have to be okay with who Jesus is. So how does this affect our lives right now? How do we change what we're doing to live a life that brings the will of God? And the best thing I can think about is this song was called Difference Maker. It was all about being the person that's different, standing up on the hill and looking back and saying all the wonderful things we did. And this song, they were trying to make a difference by making their own path. But you know what? God, when he made a difference and when he went up on the hill and stood, he stood on a cross. And when he looked down at the people, he wasn't thinking of all the great things he was doing. He was thinking about his forgiveness and his mercy and how he could bless them. And we see that because when Jesus' disciple cuts the ear off of a man and brings down the hammer of justice to kill and destroy, Jesus comes behind him and brings down the hammer of mercy. And he brings the hammer of love and healing. Two people, same scenario, different results, because Jesus is following the will of the Father, not the will of what he wants. And the application for today is, do not try to be a difference maker by following your own path. Make a difference by serving God. Today, is the five-year and one-day anniversary of Next Level Church. And as much as today is about looking back on where we've been and what we've done, today is the first day of the next 5 years of Next Level Church. And why we've done great things, and one of our mission statements that we have just pushed every day has been love God, love people, make a difference, and we've made great differences in the 757, we're not stopping. Today is about taking our breath, looking back on what we've done, seeing where we've been, and saying, now forward. And we're going from this position we are in right now to look forward as to who God is, to look forward as what he wants for us, and we're going to continue to love God, love people, and make a difference in the 757. Let's bow our heads. God, today is day one. Help us to love God, love you, love your people, and make a difference in your world.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.